Lamed Tishrei, Echad Rishchodesh Maam Cheshvan, Tuesday the 1st of November, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Noach's Brave New World. With apologies to Mr. Huxley.
Thank you and good morning. Our subject, as we have heard, is Noach's Brave New World. The Torah describes the aftermath of the Mabul, of the flood, as introducing a number of apparent changes in the world. And I say apparent because the Torah makes it clear that it's a brave new world, that changes have come about as a result of the Mabul and its aftermath. But understanding exactly what they are and the significance is not spelled out clearly in the Torah itself. And I'd like to share with you an approach which draws primarily on the novel understanding of the Malbim, which I think sheds light on the human condition as well. So the pasuk says, "Vayarach Hashem asreach anichoach, vayomer Hashem libo lo osif lekalel odes adama bavur hadam." I will not curse the land anymore because of man. It was man's corruption that led to the destruction of the world. I'm not going to go there again. Ki yeselev haadam ra minu urav. The reason is that Hashem, so to speak, acknowledges that man is endowed with a potent yetzer hara. Rami Urav, even from his childhood, from Rashi says, Mishashimin Ar, from the time that the embryo agitates in order to leave the womb, the Yitzhahara is already implanted within the human condition. And therefore, recognizing that man is struggling always with a potent Yitzhahara, I'm going to kind of be more forbearing. I'm not going to be as exacting with man because at the end of the day, he's limited in his capacity to overcome the Yitzhara, which is so very powerful. So it seems. So I'd like to try to understand what is the difference. Meaning, what changed? And then it says a little bit later, Umorachem v'chitchem. Actually, there's another pasuk which requires our attention. Od kol yimei ha'aretz. Hashem says the new change is like this, that kol yimei ha'aretz, in the future, all the days of the land, zera v'katsir, kor v'chom, kites v'chorof, yom v'layla lo yishbosu. Now, the simple understanding is that the seasons, as we know them today, are going to follow one upon the other in the natural manner. They will not be disrupted. Yom v'layla lo yishbosu, day and night, these phenomena are going to unfold in accordance with an established, recognizable pattern, and the kind of intervention which led to days of darkness and days of rain, 40 days of rain and a flood in which the whole natural order was disrupted, was upended, that's not going to happen anymore. Hashem says, from now on, I'm going to allow nature to operate in an anticipated regular pattern. There's going to be a time for planting, a time for harvesting. There will be a time when it's cold, a time when it's hot. Kites v'choref yom v'layla lo yishbosu. I'd just like to mention, because I hope we'll have time at the end also to talk about an interesting interpretation of those words yom v'layla lo yishbosu. So bear that in mind. We'll get back to it, I hope. And then it says that Hashem blessed Noach and his progeny, and he said, "Put rovu milus haaretz umorachem lechitchem." And here's a pasuk which requires an explanation: "Umorachem lechitchem, your fear and your awe, yihye al kol chayas haaretz, will be upon all the animals of the land, val kol of hashamayim, etc." And Hashem says, "I've given it all to you. Ki yerek esev nasati lechem eskol." Just as I said to Adam HaRishon, you can eat from any plant, anything that grows, any of the yield, any vegetation of the yield of the orchard and of the field, you can eat. But the implication was that Adam was not allowed to eat meat. It's the implication. But here it says clearly, I'm giving it all to you. Kerek esem nasati lechem eskol. So you can eat the animals, you can rule over them. But then the Torah says, "Vaches damchem lenafshosechem edrosh." But if you kill one another, that I'm not going to allow. I will allow you to exploit the animals, but don't exploit one another. Shafech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech. The prohibition possibly against abortion. Okay, these psukim are all very fascinating to me, and the Malbim gives us a keen insight into what is actually happening. And he has a novel approach, and to me it's fascinating because he alludes to paleontological discoveries in his day. The Malbim, as you know, lived towards the end of the 19th century, and he was an outstanding, brilliant genius. He wrote many Sfarim. He wrote Arzus Achaim, which is in Halacha, and of course he wrote on all of Tanakh, he wrote all the Chumash and the books of Nevi'im as well. He was a remarkable genius, the Malbim, and he was also alert to the intellectual currents of his day. He was once considered as to be the chief rabbi in New York City, actually. At the same time that Rav Hirsch was under consideration to be the chief rabbi in England. So they were considering the Malbim to go to New York. And it's interesting to speculate how Jewish life might have been different if the Malbim had gone to New York or if Hirsch had come to London. Who knows how the world would have changed. You can speculate. So the Malbim has the following novel approach. His suggestion is that before the flood, the world was a much more pleasant and predictable place. Not only was it predictable, but it wasn't subject to the same kind of changes, even of the season. Like we have right now, you know, we're transitioning from summer into winter. And of course, in other parts of the world, the transition is even more dramatic. Where I grew up, we used to have snow at Sukkot time sometimes. Not always, but it was not unknown. But the summers were much warmer than here, and the winters were much colder. It depends where you are in the planet. The Malbim says that before the Mabul, the whole world was like springtime the whole year round. And he says that nature itself was much more cooperative, was much more congenial. And he says that it wasn't necessary for man to labor long and hard, even though Hashem told Adam already, but everything is relative. Compared to how it was in Gan Eden, so he was driven from Gan Eden, he has to work the land. But the Malbim quotes a Medrash that used to rain once in 40 years, and that was enough. It was enough to produce the crop for 40 years, and man would have to pray for the rain. He would get the rain, and that's it. Not like we were just hearing before, we're praying for rain. Now in England, we don't need the rain here so much. We're not pining for it. But in Eretz Yisrael, they do need it. But that is now, according to the original program, the earth yielded its produce with great ease. The problem, and he says it was more nutritious as well. The fruit was more nutritious. A person could eat a small amount and would be nourished for the longest time. And the natural vigor of man was much greater than it is today. He says that in ancient times, before the Mabul, it wasn't necessary for this bracha that the animals will fear man. That was after. Before, man was stronger than the animals. Man did not need a bracha that an animal which is more powerful than a person is naturally afraid of a person, which is the case. Even lions are afraid of people, for the most part. It's only if they feel threatened or something like that. The animals which are very powerful, but because of this bracha, they have a natural fear of man. The Malbim maintains that before the Mabul, it wasn't necessary for Hashem to implant in the animals the fear of man. They were afraid of man because man was more powerful than the animals. And he even says that this is why they found, I'll just read you a few words, otherwise you may wonder whether I've just made it up. He says, "Kemo shemotzimad hayom beimke ha'adama." He says, nowadays we have discovered, archaeologists, paleontologists actually, have discovered beimke ha'adama, deep in the earth, atzamos hanefilim va'anakim, ba'alei chayim mishunim begadlam, bones of enormous animals, much bigger than we have today. Everyone knows that the elephant is the largest land animal. It's quite impressive. But the woolly mammoth was much larger. And the dinosaurs were much larger still. Enormous animals. He says because shemesu, he says shenimchu be'es ha'mabul v'lo nisharu dugmasam acharekein. After the mabul, they were gone. We don't have them anymore. But he said before the mabul, because nature itself produced creatures that were much more powerful, much larger. He said the problem is that because man's physical vigor and strength and proportions were so enormous, it overwhelmed his spirituality. And the balance was lost. In other words, the great physical prowess of man, you could say, went to his head. And as a result, his spirituality was compromised. He says, "Va'alidei tigvoras ha'chomer nechlesha hatzura," because the chomer was so strong, so the tzura, by which he means the spirituality, the spirit or the intellect, was overwhelmed.
Sorry, who says this?
The Malbin. This is the Malbin. You come in the middle, you lose out of it. Okay. V'gavar ha'afar al haruchani, and the terrestrial aspect overwhelmed the celestial, overwhelmed the ruchani, the spiritual. V'chein asa ze letovaso, v'kalalas ha'adama, be'ez ha'mabul, shenishchasa gam ha'aretz. So he says the mabul, so to speak, destroyed the world, even the physical world, and and Hashem, as a result, he caused the world to change. Later on, the Malbim says that the tilt of the earth maybe was adjusted in such a way that the prior arrangement, in which it was always, as I said, springtime, always beautiful weather, and always very comfortable, the person didn't have the anxiety. And, you know, like somebody said he was going to come to a shir last night, and then he said, "No, I can't make it. He said, the sukkos, I got a chill, and I go out at night, I get, I don't feel well, I've got a cold, I need to shake the cold. The changing weather itself is a factor in human vulnerability. And when the weather did not change, when it was always beautiful, he says the tilt of the earth was such that it was wonderful all the time. Hashem changed as a result of the model. Hashem introduced the phenomenon. And according to this, not like Rashi says that the celestial bodies, the moon and the sun and the stars and the clouds, will all function. It won't be disrupted as it was in the Mabul. That's how Rashi understands. According to Mabul, al contraire, that pattern is a novel innovation as a result of the Mabul. In the aftermath of the Mabul, Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to have to introduce changing seasons, sometimes cold, sometimes hot, sometimes rainy, sometimes wet, sometimes too hot, you can hardly cope, sometimes freezing cold, you can freeze to death if you don't start a fire or find ways to keep warm. And all of these changes meant that man's physical vigor was undermined, was diminished. He's much more frail. And therefore, by the same token, his spirituality, his intellect, has more of a chance. And that's how he understands ki yitzalev adam raminu urav. His yitzahara is so strong. So Hashem says, I need to establish greater parity, and his physical strength is going to be diminished at the same time. And he refers, as I said, in a later point also to the woolly mammoths. He says, this is why, he said, we find that in the ancient world, it seems that the parts of the world he says that animals, which today only live in warm climates, have been found in northern climes. He possibly didn't know that they were woolly mammoths and they had a coat to protect them from the cold. But it was an astonishing thing for the early paleontologists when they found evidence of what seems like enormous elephants in Norway and in northern climes where elephants can't possibly survive in such cold weather. So that's evidence that he adduces to suggest that the whole world was warm. But he's right in that, I don't want to go too much into the dinosaurs, but during the Jurassic era, it seems that the temperature in the world was much warmer than it is today. And actually, scientists presume that the evidence of dinosaurs even in England, by the way, and in northern parts of the globe, suggests that it used to be much, much warmer at that time. So this is his theory and how he explains the change in the world and the need for the change. And he maintains that the words that say, Kol Yimei Haaretz Zera V'Katzir Kor V'Chom, that is the innovation following the Mabul and as a result of the Mabul. And with this he explains something which I always found difficult. I found Rashi's explanation, if I can say, only according to my superficial understanding, inadequate. And Ramban's explanation, also not completely satisfying. I'm talking about the pasuk that I referred to before. Ki yerek esim nasati lechem eskol. Hashem says, to Adam HaRishon, I said, you can eat all the vegetation. And to you, Noach, and your descendants, you can have even the animals. It doesn't say explicitly you can eat them, but it says does say that you can rule over them, and I'm giving it into your hands, and nasati lechem eskol. So Rashi says clearly, lechem ye la'achla, shlehu sheisi la'adam harishon basar eleyerek esev. I did not allow Adam to eat meat, but only herbal greenery. But to you, keyerek esev, as the vegetation, nasati lechem eskol, you cannot eat the animals as well. By the way, just want to say that the Medrash implies, just parenthetically, that Adam and Chava did eat meat. There's a Medrash which says that the Malachim would have a braai for them every night, you know, a barbecue, that great, you know, banquets there in Gan Eden. But the pshat is, they say, that they did not have permission to kill for meat. An animal that died of its own, they were allowed to eat. But they were not allowed to kill an animal for meat. But Noach is given permission to slaughter the animals as he needs to. So Rashi doesn't explain why exactly. Why was Noach allowed to do something, and Noach and all of his descendants, Ad Hayom Hazeh, which was forbidden in the earlier generations? Rashi doesn't fully explain why. Ramban explains why, but also a bit superficial, if I can put it that way. What does Ramban say? Does anybody know? It's a well-known passage, short passage in Ramban. Okay, well that's what the Malvin, that's what I want to explain according to Malvin, absolutely. But Ramban says something quite logical. When it was decreed that all the animals would die, not the fish, but the animals would die in the Mabul, because even the animals were corrupt, and it was Noah who saved them. He saved the world. He saved all the animals. Noah is the one who saved them, so therefore he's allowed to take advantage of them in the future.
Why didn't he save the dinosaurs?
Why didn't he save the dinosaurs? It's an interesting question. He needed a bit of space on the ark for everybody else. But actually, I must tell you, since you mentioned that, many years ago I was in Yerushalayim. I don't know whether they have it still there, but there is a museum. Now they call it the Museum of the Third Temple, I think. You can see it. It's just at the Temple Institute. Yeah, it's just at the top of the stairs when you go down to the Kosel. So it's affiliated with or next door to Yeshiva HaKotel, and they've got a little museum there. So now I think it's quite more developed. But years ago, when I was there, about 15 years ago, they had a model of the Teva. And it has nothing to do with the Third Temple or anything like that, but I guess somebody must have donated it, so they had it there. And this model of the Teva had a lot of animals as well, had two interesting features. One feature was it had seven giraffes, seven pairs of giraffes, because the Pasuk says two by two all the animals, but the kosher ones will be seven by seven. Seven, seven. So...
It doesn't mean it's not kosher.
So the giraffe is a kosher species. So even though we don't eat giraffe very much, and it certainly wasn't offered in the Beis HaMikdash as a korban, but it's a kosher species. So they had 14 giraffes, 7 male and 7 female. Not that I can tell the difference between male and female, but they had 14 giraffes. Like they had 14 cows and they had 14 sheep, they had 14 giraffes. That was one issue. The other thing is they had a pair of dinosaurs going on the Teva as well. In that particular model. That's why I'm not sure if it's still there, probably. It invites controversy.
The Mark speaks about the Re'em.
Yeah, that's true. Which also
hung on from the outside because it couldn't get inside.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Exactly. It was attached by
very true. So maybe the Re'im was affiliated with the dinosaurs. But according to, so that's what Ramban says about why they were allowed to eat meat, because kiyumam ba'avuro. But according to the Malbim, and someone already hopped onto it, according to the Malbim, he provides, to me, a more compelling explanation. That before the flood, it wasn't necessary for man to eat meat, because vegetation provided all the nourishment that he required. Now, we may have some vegetarians here who will protest that even now you can get all the protein you need from tofu and things like that, you know, tofu aleichem baracha. But many people find that, meat is necessary, helpful for a balanced diet. So that's what he says, that they gave, Hashem told Noach, you can eat meat now because you're going to need it for your survival, because your natural constitution is not as robust as it was previously. So therefore, you can eat meat because you need the meat. Okay.
Why do you say people are not coming different from it? They're not allowed to eat meat.
Okay. Very good question. The problem is that when you eat meat, it drags you down. You pay a price for it. That and the Gemara in Pesachim says, "Am ha'aretz osur le'achol basar." An ignoramus is not allowed to eat meat, because it feeds his animalistic side, and he doesn't have the Torah, the spirituality, to balance it. You have a similar statement that the Talmud Chacham should only eat meat on Shabbos, or Yom Tov, or a Seudas Mitzvah, doesn't eat meat at a Seudas Rishus. You have statements along those lines, and that's exactly the point. The idea is that man needs to eat the meat because he needs it for his strength and his constitution, but it comes at a cost, it comes at a risk. As well.
So, are you saying that Namarot's even on Shabbos and Yom Tov?
It could be on Shabbos and Yom Tov, he can, if he eats for the right reason. But again, this is not a halachic prescription. I'm not saying you've got to take an exam before you sit down for dinner every night. Your mother, your wife feeds you dinner or something, she first fahers you on Davar Metzia or something like that. It doesn't mean like that. But it's highlighting the risk factor in personal indulgence and eating meat, which symbolizes the animalistic aspect of man himself. But it is possible for a person, and this I'm catapulting from the maybe quotidian madrega that we find ourselves upon, to the exalted ideal, which is found at the end of Mesillas Yesharim, where the Mesillas Yesharim says that Kedusha means that a person is able to elevate the physical. I'll just read you a few lines. It's very end of Mesillas Yesharim. Klala shel davar inyan hakedusha u'shiyeh ha'adam davek kol kach be'elokav. A person should cleave to Hashem to such a degree, ad shebishum ma'aseh asher ya'aseh lo yipareid v'lo yazuz mimenu yisparach. Nothing that he does will separate from him from Hashem. Even when he goes about his business, when he earns a living, when he deals with changing his energy provider because he, is overpaying. The things that weigh a person down in life, someone who's on a lofty madrega does not depart from his thoughts to Hashem even at that time. And the punchline is this, Ad she yoser yis'alu ha-dvarim ha-gashmiyim, asher yishamshu le'echal mitashmishav, b'mashu mishtamesh, to the point that the physical things that he uses, including eating food or eating meat, are elevated through him more than he is dragged down by them. He elevates the physical rather than the physical dragging him down. A person who has reached the level of Kedusha is able to appreciate and enjoy the physical pleasures of life, because he elevates them rather than their compromising him. This is the whole idea of Shirayim, that someone who is a great person, so when he eats fish, when he eats kugel, when he eats whatever it might be, it is elevated through the eating. And that's why people want to take, Shirayim, because it is endowed with some measure of spiritual potency, because it has been used by a tzaddik for his physical advancement. So this is the challenge. This is the challenge after the mabul, in which we live in this world with our compromised circumstances. We are constrained to eat food daily, regularly, which he implies, Malva implies that earlier it wasn't necessary because it was so nourishing and the person's natural constitution was so strong that he did not have to eat a lot of food. But his very physical prowess, as we said, overwhelmed his spirituality. Now the physical form is enfeebled and we have more of an opportunity, a better chance to gain parity through the cultivation of the spiritual. But even so, we have the threat of which eating meat is the symbol of the physicality. And the ideal for which you need to ascend to the highest level of Mesilas Yesharim is that a person who's at the loftiest level, even higher than Precious, the Poresh abstains from physical indulgence. But someone who reaches the Shar HaKedusha is able to enjoy those things without being dragged down. Of course, that's a very exalted madrigal. Our time is just about up, but I do want to tell you, I think it's a novelty about the Yom V'Laila Lo Yishbosu. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives from here the principle which many of us have come across, perhaps we've all come across it. The Gemara says, Goy Sheshavas Chayav Misa. Yom V'Laila Lo Yishbosu, day and night they've got to work. They don't have any time off. Yidin, we get Shabbos off, but Goy Sheshavas Chayav Misa. And this gives rise to an interesting dilemma which some people have come across, and through another aspect of my work, I do encounter it regularly, and that is a person who wants to become Jewish. He's a Ben Noach, but he wants to become a Yid. And he's learning, and he's practicing, and he's becoming more accustomed to Jewish way of life. He's trying it out, and he's very keen, and very earnest, and very sincere, and he wants to keep Shabbos. And then you say, yeah, but you're not allowed to keep Shabbos. Goy Sheshavas Chayav Misa. So when you're a Yid, you keep Shabbos. The problem is that if a person never keeps Shabbos at all, and he goes to the mikveh one fine day, he has an encounter with a moel with a sharp knife, and then he's okay, now I've got to keep Shabbos. What's Shabbos? I don't know anything about Shabbos. I've never done it, never seen it, never practiced it, never tried it out. I've never taken it for a test drive. So it's very difficult to expect a person to keep Shabbos without ever experiencing it. And not just that. I mean, we can all understand the importance of Shabbos in Jewish life. Without it, a person is not going to ever experience or ever understand what it means to lead a Jewish life. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky doesn't address this aspect of it, but his insight has implications for our question. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, Yom v'layla lo yishbosu. Why not layla v'yom? You say, well, why should it be layla v'yom? Shtei v'hi erev v'hi voker. Layla comes before the morning. The day begins at night. Shabbos begins at Shkia. Every day, Rosh Chodesh, every day begins at night. As we know, v'hi erev v'hi voker. So he says an interesting thought. He says that Adam HaRishon was created in the day or in the night? In the day. So he began to count from the days. So from Adam until Noah, until Matan Torah, the day Taka began in the morning. It was Yom V'Laila. When the Torah was given to the Jewish people, there it says, Vayhi Erev Vayhi Voker, and then Klal Yisrael understood that the day begins at night. What's the Nafka Mina? The Nafka Mina is that for Bnei Noach, the day begins in the morning. So, Goy Sheshavas Chayev Misa, according to some, not just this Chiddush Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, but others say, or Rav Yaakov Etlinger says it as well, he says it by way of answering how it is that Avram Avinu could keep all the mitzvahs. Could Avram Avinu keep Shabbos? Yeah, he kept even Eruv Tavshilin, he kept Shabbos, sure he did. But how can he keep Shabbos if he hadn't yet received the Torah? If it was only through his own instinctive understanding of Rotzon Hashem, so Shabbos is a problem, because if you're a Yid, you've got to keep Shabbos. If you're a Goy, you may not keep Shabbos. Avram Avinu was a Ben Noach, until the Torah was given. Or maybe Yaakov, it could be Yitzchak already was born into the tradition, but how about Avram? So they say that Avram Avinu kept Shabbos like a Ben Noach, Dahainu, from morning until the next morning. So therefore, if a Goy keeps Shabbos from the way we keep it, the hours that we keep it, So he hasn't violated Yom V'Layla L'Ish Bosu. Yom V'Layla L'Ish Bosu means if he were to keep Shabbos from Shabbos morning until Sunday morning, that's what he's not allowed to do. But if he goes out for pizza, Matzoi Shabbos, like everybody does, so then he's violated Shabbos according to B'nai Noach. So this is an afkamina in practical terms, and this is the policy of the Lenin based in many other batidin as well. Some do not agree, but our policy is that prospective gerim are expected to keep Shabbos, every Shabbos, without compromise. And sometimes people tell them, no, you've got to violate. They tell me I've got to strike a match, I've got to write two words. We don't take that view. There are some who do, but we don't take that view. That's our policy, that they should keep Shabbos properly. And Yom V'Layla Lo Yishbosu, as we've explained, can be interpreted in other ways and does not compromise Shabbos the way we understand it. I don't know if you say Saying Kaddish, I like to say Kaddish. Yeah. So, you have a Kaddish. Yeah.